Kate Kendall is the executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. NCLR has just launched a new campaign to stamp out discredited ex-gay therapies. It's called Hashtag Born Perfect. Kate, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
So happy to be here, Greg. Thank you.
Well, listen, let's just dive right in. Why did the National Center for Lesbian Rights decide to make this issue a priority?
We launched the Born Perfect campaign now about 2 months ago, but it is it's a campaign to end conversion therapy in 5 years. Mm-hmm. But it's important to understand that we didn't just come to this issue 2 months ago. In fact, I started being aware of conversion therapy when I was at the ACLU in Utah. This is now 23 years ago, and Shannon Minter, who now is our legal director but was then the youth project director at NCLR, called me at the ACLU and said, look, there's a facility in the middle of the state in Utah that is permitting young people to be institutionalized by their parents because of their sexual orientation. And I remember being shocked by this. I couldn't believe that could actually be done. Well, it turns out it was being done. And that was the beginning of my understanding that parents, because they love their kids, and they think that sexual orientation can and should be changed, and they think their life as a gay person is going to be more difficult, seek out these quack therapists to change their sexual orientation, and what they do is untold damage. We are finally at a moment in that 23 years that's passed since then where there is a unanimity of social science research that says this is bad and dangerous and damaging and does no good, and sexual orientation can't be changed, and That is intersecting with a greater level of just public and community understanding and support for LGBT issues. So we felt like this was the perfect time to launch an ambitious campaign that says every kid is born perfect, how they identify, who they are is perfect, cannot and should not be changed, and making the bold but we think completely doable proclamation that we can end conversion therapy in 5 years.
I think it's a great title, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you – I think most people, I imagine most of our listeners are at least aware of ex-gay therapy and sort of what has been happening. Can you give us a sense of the scope of this? How many people are affected by these attempts at therapy, in quotes?
You know, that's such an important question, because I do think one of the things that we see even in the LGBT community as we talk about this work is one of the very first responses we ever get is, oh my gosh, you mean that still goes on? And it's really important for people to understand this is not a practice that is falling by the wayside, or that therapists no longer engage in, or is that something that belong to, you know, folks of my generation but is not being practiced upon young people. There are still therapists in every single state, and I just defy people to not find therapists. You Google conversion therapy wherever you are, and you will find therapists, I bet, within 20 miles of where you live, who practice this quackery. And so we have been finding, there is a survivors network, that our Samantha Ames, who is the lead attorney in our office working on this, along with Shannon, along with Jeff Kors, who's our state policy strategist, along with me. But Sam is in touch with these survivors, and the survivor network is growing. And since we launched the campaign, even more individuals who see that there is some relief in sight, that there is some advocacy there for them, have contacted us with horror stories of conversion therapy that they were subjected to, maybe in some cases it's 15 or 20 years ago, and in some cases it's 2 years ago or last year. And in every single case, what we were hearing from these survivors is that while they go on to thrive and have wonderful lives, they never recover from the trauma of being told every day that there is something wrong with you and disordered and that you must change. And then, of course, there are a whole range of therapies that are used. There are drugs that are used. There's aversion therapy that's used. It's just a whole range of very traumatizing activities that are practiced on you by the person you are supposed to trust to take care of your mental health. And instead of that, they are really consigning folks to a life of trauma based on these practices.
Hmm. I'm almost afraid to ask this question, but do you have a sense of what proportion of the victims of this stuff are kids when they go through it?
Well, that's probably one of the most disturbing statistics, because if you can make it to adulthood, you know, one's early 20s, even if you grew up in a time when sexual orientation and homosexual identity was condemned, or gender identity other than completely consistent with your birth gender was not completely condemned, you still can grow up. You're still growing up in a culture, even today, with a lot of shame around sexual orientation or gender identity that varies from what the society says is dominant and says is the most accepted. But if you can make it into your 20s, usually we see people being able to kind of stand on their own, and even if they're carrying internalized homophobia or shame, you know, they go to gay supportive therapists to sort of deal with it, and they, you know, kind of stand up to their families, and maybe their families kind of come around to it. By far, the overwhelming percentage of individuals who are pushed into conversion therapy, it happens to them when they are too young to object to it. So we're talking young people anywhere from 10 years old to 13, 14, 15 years old. The biggest bulk is probably sort of in the 12 to 15-year range, just as kids. I mean, it's the most important. I mean, I'm a parent myself. I understand how important those years are to a kid's sense of self-identity. It's when they're coming into puberty, you know, really kind of bridging that gap between being a child and being a young adult. And so those are the years where there's a great deal of fragility, and a lot of damage can be done in the wrong hands. And obviously, you know, these folks bear the scars for the rest of their life.
Wow. So it's 2014. What is it that you think leads people to be desperate enough to ignore the science that you noted at the beginning, to try to, as they say, pray away the gay for themselves, or maybe even more significantly for their children? What is it that drives people to this?
Well, answering that question is going to be really important to our success. And what we feel like happens is that parents don't know the science. They don't know that the damage they are doing. They still believe the lie that sexual orientation can be changed, or that it should be changed. And they believe this based on religious beliefs, where they believe their child is going to hell if their sexual orientation is other than heterosexual. So their parents are coming from an impulse to, quote, save their kid. And so I want to be clear, these are parents who are generally are uninformed about how dangerous the practices are, but they're coming from a place of love. And I feel like our most important, I mean, even though we're going to pass legislation, and we have already in states to ban conversion therapy on minors, another key prong, and perhaps the most important prong of our effort in this campaign, is to make sure that any parent who would consider conversion therapy cannot ignore the fact that social science, psychological institutions and associations unanimously condemn the practice as not only not doing what it says it's supposed to do, which is changing one's sexual orientation, which can't be done, but that it does tremendous long-term psychic and emotional damage. And if we can educate parents, in addition to banning the practice in states where that's possible, I think that is kind of the secret link in ending conversion therapy in 5 years, because we may not be able to pass bans in every single state, but if we can educate parents so that they understand you will do more harm to your child than anything that could happen to them as living as an openly LGBT person, supporting that is how you best show you love your child and save them from damage and harm. Putting them into any sort of conversion therapy, it will be traumatizing to them and will do damage. And if parents come to understand that, I think that any need for these services or the demand for these services will diminish or be ceased altogether, is what we're seeking.
What is the situation in the states? I think California, Governor Brown signed legislation banning conversion therapy. What about the other 49 states?
We have bans. We have successfully helped to draft legislation and pass bans in California and New Jersey. In both of those situations, the California law was challenged by practitioners of this therapy and parents who want to continue to have their children be subjected to it. We successfully defended the law in California, and that case just ended just a few months ago. We won at the trial court. We won at the Ninth Circuit. The quacks who practiced this appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court denied review. So in California, it is now the law that it is unlawful to practice conversion therapy on minors. In New Jersey, the law was successfully passed. We won at the trial court, and now that law is still on appeal. We're still on appeal in that state. We have lined up probably another half dozen states where we are talking to legislators who are interested in introducing legislation. Representative David Robinson in Florida has introduced legislation and intends to introduce it again. There are several other states where we're going to see legislation introduced in this next legislative session. So definitely there's a multi-pronged effort here. It's banning it and using those bans as a conversation to educate parents about the damage done. And then also really condemning the practice so that we limit the number of people who would practice this, to understand that if you practice this, you're a quack. There's just no other word for it. You are doing damage. You are not upholding the oath to take care of people's mental health and to service them and to treat them in the best way possible that honors them as individuals and human beings. What you're engaging in is not only unlawful in states where we can make it unlawful, but it's just bad medicine. So between all of those prongs, we're hopeful that we can achieve our goal of coming to a day where you enter a Google search for conversion therapy and you get no results other than the practice no longer happens.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the education part of this. What are the nuts and bolts of the education piece in terms of reaching out to parents with this message? How does that work?
One thing that has been perhaps the most moving and also gratifying aspect of this work since we launched Born Perfect is that more and more survivors are telling their own stories. Because, look, I can talk to, you know, I can talk till I'm blue in the face about how damaging this is and how dangerous this is. But when you hear it from a young woman or a young man who was subjected to it, that is the most powerful voice. So pushing out survivor stories, which we have on our website. We have a Born Perfect subset of our website. Those stories are available there. There's going to be a very aggressive media campaign to push out these stories and to have these stories front and center. Joined by, and this is going to be launched later this week, joined by former advocates of conversion therapy, individuals who identified as ex-gay, who were involved in organizations like Exodus, for example, that trafficked in the lie that one can change or should change their sexual orientation. They themselves are now disavowing their previous position and endorsing our view that sexual orientation cannot and should not be changed. Those are going to be very powerful voices, and you're going to see a lot of coverage of those voices in the coming weeks. And then finally, parents who made the decision out of a place of love to enroll their kids in some sort of conversion therapy and now have come to regret it and recognize that it was the worst decision they ever made. And it did, really unspeakable damage. And if they had it to do over again, they would never do it. And that parent-to-parent communication is going to be enormously important. So those are some of the key components that you'll see in the next few months of the rollout.
Gotcha. Kate, we're running out of time, but I want to find out how our listeners can get involved in the campaign. Can you quickly let us know how that would work?
Oh, absolutely. Please contact us at info@nclrights.org. info@nclrights.org. Let us know if you're a survivor. Let us know if you want to help in any way. Let us know if how we can contact you. You can definitely find more materials on our website. You can also email me directly, kkendell, K-E-N-D-E-L-L, at nclrights.org. And if you want to just have a private message, talk to me about the situation and how you want to help, just let us know. We can only do this as a community that unites. NCLR can't do it alone, but we're going to, between survivors, between ex-gay folks who recognize the lie of conversion therapy, and between parents and survivors, we are going to end conversion therapy in 5 years.
Kate Kendall is the executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. NCLR has just launched a new campaign to stamp out discredited ex-gay therapies. It's called #BornPerfect. Kate, thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
It was a total pleasure, Greg. Thank you.